You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Let's talk about the Premier League, which is the United Kingdom or the UK's top soccer league. This is interesting and kind of amusing. Scammers hacked into the email account of one of the soccer clubs, and they did not say which soccer club. The managing director, according to a report released a couple of weeks ago, by UK's National Cybersecurity Center, and these attackers tried to transfer out $1 million, although in the UK they use pounds. The article says dollars, but I'm not sure. The only thing, though, that stopped the money transfer from going through was an actual flag on the criminal's bank account as possibly fraudulent, and so the bank wouldn't let the transfer go through, and here we are. So the only thing that stopped it was a possible flag, which means the scammer probably got lazy. Moving on, let's talk about Instacart. A lot of people use this here in the United States. The personal information of hundreds of thousands of Instacart customers is being sold on the dark web. Now, this data includes names, the last four digits of credit card numbers, order histories, and appears to have affected customers who use the grocery service, in late July when this information was discovered. So by virtue of that, the sellers of this information put it on two dark websites and were offering information on what appeared to be 278,531 accounts. Now, Instacart denies the breach, but BuzzFeed, who's the one that actually broke the story live, actually interviewed two Instacart customers who were found in that breach and confirmed that those transactions were theirs. Now, full disclosure, BuzzFeed actually contacted me as a cybersecurity professional to basically validate this. And so I worked with the reporter that broke this story, and I went to the dark web and actually verified that that information was there and it looked legit. And so by virtue of that, I'm also mentioned in the story. And so take my word for it, people. It's not looking good. And that's all I'm going to say about Instacart for now, because I am still involved with BuzzFeed on this breaking story. So we'll continue on from there. Moving on, let's talk about Dave. Now, Dave is a digital banking app, and it's basically been considered a tech unicorn. They confirmed about a week ago or so that they had a security breach after an attacker published details of 7,516,625 users on a public forum. In an email to ZDNet, Dave, the company, said the security breach originated on the network of a former business partner. This company is Waydev, which is an analytics platform used by engineering teams. And to quote them, as a result of a breach at Waydev, one of Dave's former third-party service providers, a malicious party, recently gained unauthorized access to certain user data at Dave. Now, the company said that it already plugged basically the hole, and it's in the process of notifying all of its customers. So if you use Dave for financial anything, heads up to you. Moving on, let's talk about the Nevada Department of Employment, Training, and Rehabilitation, or DETR. They are being accused of a data breach due to a report of a lot of fraud actually happening in the report. Now, state officials say fraudulent unemployment filings are not stemming from any known data breach within the DETR, but we shall see, because that's an ongoing investigation, and I will obviously keep you up to date on that. Moving on, let's talk about the internal software source code of more than 50 high-profile companies. And this is insane, and we are still not done. This was originally reported on Bleeping Computer, which is a tech website. A Swiss developer named Tilly Kottman was able to pull source code from Microsoft, Nintendo, Disney, Motorola, and others of that ilk because of an insecure DevOps or development operations application that left proprietary company information exposed. And so Kottman basically posted the code online in a repository manager known as GitLab. And so anybody could basically access this, and he tagged it as X-confidential or confidential and proprietary. The developer then posted a link to the online repository to his Twitter account, and boom, it went absolutely nuts. I've been hearing about the Nintendo breach for quite some time, but it's Microsoft, Disney, Motorola, and more. And this really underscores the need that we have to secure our development process and production. No more fast and loose with controls, developers, if you're listening to this. Moving on, let's talk about Rite Aid. And I think I'm going to do a deep dive on this one, because my God. All right, so they weren't hacked. Rite Aid hacked you. And depending on where you are listening to me in the geographical United States, you might have been involved in this if you use Rite Aid. Now, Reuters published last week a deep investigation into the use of facial recognition technology by Rite Aid, which the drugstore chain deployed to 200 stores over the last 8 years. Now, the tech was installed largely in low-income neighborhoods in New York and LA, which obviously just threw up a whole bunch of alarms for civil liberty advocates. And a further concern was that Rite Aid actually outsourced some of its technology from a company with links to the Chinese government. That's right. The Chinese government had its hands into the facial recognition system in Rite Aid. Now, Rite Aid stopped using facial recognition following Reuters inquiries, but the huge, massive breadth, focus, and duration of this implementation is insane. And so, like I said, I could do a deep dive on this one, and I am seriously considering it. And finally, we're going to talk about the last breach of the week, or of the last few weeks, because this one is absolutely bonkers and it is still unfolding. And that is a company called Blackbaud. Now, they are a cloud software developer specializing in fundraising suites for charities and educational institutions. So if you've ever donated to a charity, there's a high probability that they are using Blackbaud. They are massive in that. If you work with a charity or, let's say, a private school and are donating to there, this is where Blackbaud comes in. They quietly paid off a ransomware attacker and then got around to telling everybody about it 2 months after the attacker notified them that they had stole the information. Now, Blackbaud admitted the attack in a statement about 2 weeks ago or so, and Blackbaud claimed that the May 2020 ransomware infection was caught at an early stage and that the file encryption process that ransomware does to lock you out of your files was halted before it fully completed. Now, according to their statement, and I quote, "The cyber criminal did not access credit card information, bank account information, or social security numbers because protecting our customers' data is our top priority. We paid the cyber criminal's demand with confirmation that the copy they had that they had removed from the network had been destroyed." You cannot trust that. You can absolutely not trust that, because I can make a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy, and I can destroy the primary one, and all you have is my insurance, and then I can get money from you, and then 2 weeks later, or a week later, an hour later, a minute later, turn around, dump it on a dark web forum, and sell it that way. So that is, I think, a joke when they say that. Now, here's the thing. It's very interesting timing, because they released this notification on the day, when everybody was focused on the Twitter breach. The Twitter breach that I had talked about earlier in this segment here, where Bill Gates and Elon Musk were saying, hey, you know, give me a Bitcoin and I will give you two because I'm rich and generous, that kind of thing. And everybody was up in arms about Twitter. And so Blackbaud quietly said, we had a breach. Now, here's the thing. Their customers have been coming out of the woodwork in the last couple of weeks declaring breaches, and it really underscores a problem that we have with supply chains, because Blackbaud is in the supply chain of a ton of charities and institutions and all of this. And before I give you this list of declaring this, just of all these people declaring breaches thanks to Blackbaud, you know, they exposed, and this is what the breaches notifications are saying, that contact information like name, mailing address, phone, and email address, not to mention demographical information like age, gender, birthday, relationship to whatever entity you're with, a history of the donor's relationship to that entity. So if you consistently donate to a charity, the attackers are going to know it. And so here's a list of organizations that I have found, and this is by no means complete, but I wanted to give you a little taste for what we've got going on here, because it is going to get just worse and worse. And remember, these are charities, or these are schools. So this is a very tough group to have a data breach for, especially on the charity side. But for example, we have Crisis, which is a homeless charity in the UK. Vermont nonprofits, including the Vermont Food Bank, Middlebury College, and Vermont Public Radio, the University of York, the University College Oxford, University of London, University of Strathclyde, Aberystwyth University of Wales, University of Reading, University of Sussex, Aston University, Longborough University, Exeter, the University of Leeds, Brunel University of London, University of Edinburgh. Canada's Ambrose University, Rhode Island School of Design, Western University Australia, Western University Canada, Western University UK, Western University USA, Des Moines University, Bentley University in Massachusetts, University of North Florida, Human Rights Watch, the mental health charity Young Minds, West Virginia University Foundation, and Ventura College Foundation. The Archdiocese of Gaylord in Northern Michigan, the Choir with No Name, which is a choir for people affected by homelessness, the San Diego Public Library Foundation, Cheverus Jesuit Catholic School, Open Space Institute, Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina, Sue Ryder, which is support for people living with a terminal illness or neurological conditions, and on. Over 120 have declared, and we are still climbing. This is why we need good data security. And if you've ever donated to a charity, you were probably affected by this, and that really sucks. But those were a quick recap of the breaches of the week, and what I left out could have filled the hour. So, hopefully none of us were hit.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive is probably one of the most disturbing deep dives I have ever done here, because it's happening right here in the United States to basically everybody that is connected to society. Did you know you have a secret social credit score and it's basically irreversible? This is what we're talking about, and we are looking at possibly a new era of discrimination on the social level. And this is absolutely crazy. Now, if you know anything about your credit score, your regular credit score, you know that the lower the credit score, the more difficult it is to do things like secure a low interest loan or pass a renter's application or get a mortgage or get a car, et cetera, et cetera. You end up paying more because your score is lower. Now, credit scores typically look at things like income to debt ratio or your frequency for missing payments and stuff like that. And then they calculate a score for you in attempt to quantify to lenders just how trustworthy you are. Can you afford that, you know, $500,000, mortgage? Your credit score should tell the lender that, yes, you can, and you can make the monthly payments and you're not going to skip. Or maybe that limit is $100,000 or $1 million, whatever that is. But this is typically why we have credit scores. But now, other types of institutions outside of lenders want to understand if you're a quote-unquote good fit for whatever it is they do, and they are now using services that data mine you to get this information. Now, a while back, I believe on the air, but also in my daily videos and podcasts, I actually talked about this for one very specific thing, and I'll get to that. But with this new information that just came out, it's really hard to ignore just how much this is ramping up and how this affects literally everybody in the United States, not to mention other countries as well. Now, this was broken by the Washington Post, and I'm cribbing a lot of my notes from this, but I've also got my own, obviously, commentary on this and my own information and everything, but it is kind of interesting, fascinating, and terrifying all at the same time. Now, there are specialized tech companies that you've probably never ever heard of that are basically tapping into a vast amount of your personal data to generate what is essentially a secret surveillance score, or a digital mugshot, as the Washington Post put it, of millions and millions of Americans. And this is supposedly supposed to predict our future behavior. Now, the firms that sell these scoring services to major businesses are across pretty much every vertical of the U.S. economy. And so here are some of the major ways that your phone data is actually being collected and used to essentially judge and score you. So if you work for a large employer, many of them use a company called HireVue. This is a firm that generates an employability score about the candidates by basically analyzing tens of thousands of factors, including a person's facial expressions, voice intonations, and other information like that. other employers, including smaller employers, are using a company called Cornerstone for their score, which basically considers where a job prospect lives, which web browser they actually use, and other things to judge how successful they will be at a job. So maybe you live in a low-income area. Maybe that's going to score you lower than somebody else who's, like, let's say, living in a wealthy neighborhood. I have no idea what my web browser is going to tell them about me. Maybe if I'm still using Internet Explorer, they think I'm unadaptable to change or something like that. I have no idea. The web browser I use is Brave. It's not one of the big ones, and I wonder what the score would be, good or bad, if I'm using that, because I use it for privacy. Now, also on top of this, brand name retailers are purchasing risk scores from a company called Retail Equation to help make judgments whether a consumer is going to commit fraud if they return goods for refunds. So basically, if I walk into a store and let's say I have to return something that I bought there, they basically have this entire history and a score that says, well, given past behavior, he may simply have stolen this and is trying to return this, or something along those lines. How they quantify that, I'm not sure. Basically, people in the gig economy outside of this are using outside firms, like a company called Sift, for example, to also score consumers' overall trustworthiness. And so if I go to, let's say, one of these websites or have one of these interactions in the gig economy, if somebody is using Sift, they are basically scoring me on how I am trustworthy. How they do that, I'm not sure, but all of this is being collected from data in the phone. So wireless customers, for example, basically, if their algorithms predict that you are going to be less profitable, so meaning maybe you bought the cheap phone and maybe you got your cellular carrier service on sale or through a discount or something like that, if you are deemed less profitable, you may be forced to endure longer customer service hold times for people that are, let's say, paying full price and buying the top level phones and all of this, because they are basically now putting you into a different economic class, saying, well, we're basically not spending as much money or making enough money off of you. And so the person with, you know, 8 phones and all of them are, you know, top tier iPhones or Samsungs or something, that person goes to the front of the line. Auto insurers are also doing this, and they can raise your premiums based on the score that they calculate using information from the smartphone app, because it tracks your driving style. So if you install the app and basically you have GPS located and you've got, let's say, great insurance and no tickets, but this thing is continuously catching you driving 90 miles an hour in a school zone or not really obeying traffic laws, they are going to score you and basically say you're a higher risk, and they're going to raise your premiums because you've installed this app into your phone that is now allowing them to data mine you and track you in this way. To move on, large analytics firms are now monitoring whether we are likely to take our medication based on our propensity to refill our prescriptions. So pharmaceutical companies, healthcare providers, and insurance companies can then use those scores, among other things, to, quote, match the right patient investment level to the right patients. So maybe I'm on a whole bunch of medications that I am paying quite a bit of money monthly for, and I am taking them regularly, which means that the pharmaceutical company and the healthcare provider and, you know, my local pharmacy and all of that are basically going to be perpetually making money off me. So maybe now I am getting more personalized care as opposed to, let's say, the person that fills a prescription once a year for like a Z-Pak, you know, for the week kind of thing. This is absolutely insane, and it gets worse. The Washington Post also found that surveillance scoring, basically what we are talking about here, the surveillance scoring, is a product of two different trends. Now, the first trend is a rampant and mostly unregulated collection of pretty much every intimate detail about our lives. And this is amassed instantly and constantly on our smartphones, our smart devices. So if you have an Amazon Echo in your house, for example, this could be smart connected toys that phone home back to the cloud, even a toaster, you know, if it's wired in. This massive amount of data is a lot of things that we just surrender voluntarily, and we don't know that we're doing it. But if you think about it, we are voluntarily surrendering our demographics, our possible income level, facial characteristics, the sound of our voice, our precise location, our shopping history, our medical conditions, genetic information, what we search on the internet, websites we visit, when we read an email, what apps we use and how long we use them, how often we sleep, how often we exercise, and on and on and on. on and on. We are giving this information out because of the apps that we install, and this information is then being sold to companies that are aggregating it and selling it to companies that may or may not cater to you. Now, the second trend that's driving these scores up is the arrival of technologies that are actually able to manipulate and crunch this data. We have basically high-performance computing now, so we are much faster at crunching through all of these numbers, if you will. We are increasing our internet speeds across major areas in the United States, whether it's wired. Many neighborhoods now can get 1,000 megabit speed. We're talking about 5G, which is expanding the infrastructure speed and performance. So this leads then to scoring algorithms that use artificial intelligence to go through this data and then start aggregating it and rating us in some kind of way. Now, the results of this is automated decisions based on your unique and secret surveillance score that are essentially irreversible. Because let's say in a regular credit system, let's say I have 750 credit and suddenly my credit goes to 710, I have the ability to go to TransUnion, Equifax, Experian, etc., and say, okay, what does my credit score look like? Why did it go from 750 to 710? And I can dispute it. I can say this is a fraudulent charge or, you know, whatever it is, and then get my score back up. Here, you don't know what your score is. I mean, this is a huge thing. This entire process is basically concealed from us. It is mostly impossible to know basically what our score is, what our problems are with it, let alone whether a score is inaccurate or outdated, or maybe it's the product of a bias or discriminatory algorithm or code that basically was programmed by God knows who. There is no appeal process. This is what we are talking about. And I think the Washington Post writers actually nailed it with this passage, and I quote them directly. The tech industry insists that its every advance improves our lives, but that's a myth. Surveillance scoring enables companies to cloak old school discrimination in an aura of technological infallibility and wonder. Secret surveillance scores create micro markets in which some consumers are no longer welcome. They divide Americans into haves and have nots, with the losers relegated to the status of second class citizens. And I think that is 100% correct, because if you are looking at this, and let's say I have obviously cellular service, I have actually a lot of phones. I am typically a gadget person, so by virtue of that, I've got multiple gadgets on my wireless account, my mobile account. I've got top tier phones like Samsung, for example, on there. And so now, if my carrier is looking at me, thinking this guy spends a good chunk of money with us every month, I'm also running a business too. So they are going to give me preferential treatment, whereas my next door neighbor, let's say he just got the basic thing. He barely uses his phone. He's paying for the minimum. He maybe has to wait an hour for service when I get it instantly. His problem might be more severe than mine at the moment, but it doesn't matter. This is what we're talking about. Now, they also said, the Washington Post also said this, and I think this is very telling too. And again, I quote directly from the Washington Post. We petitioned the Federal Trade Commission to investigate and regulate surveillance scoring. The commission's response? A blog post urging the firms that develop and apply scores to regulate themselves. So basically, the FTC or Federal Trade Commission is saying, well, that sucks, but hey, everybody, if you're in this market, if you're doing this kind of thing, please regulate, please do something, we're hands off. I think that's insane. Now, outside of this article and outside of everything that the Washington Post did, as I mentioned when I first started this deep dive, I've actually been talking about these secret social scores for a while. And the one that I was talking about, and obviously outside of China, because China has a social scoring system that is public. You know your social score. It directly affects things. If you have a low social score for, let's say, bad talking the Chinese government, you're denied loans, you're denied access to public transportation, you may not be able to travel. There are some real serious consequences, whereas the American version of this is completely confederated, unknown, used by various corporations that we interact with. You walk into Walmart or Target, they may have basically a score, and it may come from two different sources. Target may use something different than Walmart, you know, their major competitors, but maybe Walmart has you as verboten, you're not allowed in the place, or you're seen as a risk, and Target doesn't. So this can be completely arbitrary. Now, the one I was talking about before, which I thought was abhorrent, but it basically gives you a social score in the United States, Canada, Europe, and Australia, and it's called Patron Scan. Now, this is specifically for restaurants and bars. So let's say I go into a bar and they check my ID. My ID is scanned using the Patron Scan software. I am now put into that master database, into that system. Now, let's say I have some kind of altercation, whether it's, let's say, physical, I get into a fight or whatever it is, or let's say I just complain about the food and the owner of the restaurant doesn't like the fact that I complained about the food. He or she can then give me a negative score on Patron Scan, put in whatever they want, basically. And so when, let's say, I travel from, you know, Chicago to Europe and walk into a place and they take my ID, that in Patron Scan might pop up and say, well, this guy is, you know, a risk. You should not seat him. And now I can be denied service basically wherever I go to a place that is using Patron Scan. And they are continuing to grow and expand their operations. Now, I think overall, this is why we need the GDPR, which is the General Data Protection Regulation, that Europe spun up in 2018. In the beginning of this year, California created their own with the CCPA. But we need this in the United States. We have no idea how much we are being data mined. And this just really underscores the problem that I think we have here. With this, we are, one, voluntarily giving up everybody, or rather everything, which is giving up everybody. But we are doing this because we are using the convenience of a mobile phone. This is a phone that we pay for. This is a service, cellular service we pay for. But a lot of the apps that we use are free. And by virtue of that, we are the product. They are data mining us.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show. And I think we covered a lot of really good stuff. And I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.